and welcome to Crazy Talk Podcast. This is Angela Campagna. I'm a licensed clinical social worker from Conway, Arkansas, at Face-to-Face Therapy. And I'm here with you today with my wonderful, fun co-host, Jason Took.
Yes, welcome everybody to another episode of Crazy Talk. Jason here again, and Angela, and we're here again. We have a guest today.
Yes, I'm super excited about our guest, Dr. Caleb Dixon from Bannister and Leblong. He's my absolute favorite doctor, and he's also the one that I go to when I'm getting a little crazy myself. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Dr. Dixon?
Yeah, well, first, thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to this. And I'm a family medicine doctor here in Conway. I work at Bannister Leblong Clinic. I grew up in Arkansas, Stuttgart, Arkansas, actually, and then came to UCA because it was close to home, and then kind of fell in love with Conway, met my wife here, went to med school at Little Rock just down the road, and did my residency training in Jonesboro at the UMS program up there. And then we kind of had planned all along to get back to Conway. So we've been back here for 2 years now. And so practice family medicine here, pretty much full, a pretty wide spectrum family medicine, mostly adult medicine, see some kids every now and then. So that's the short rundown about me. So,
yes, I'm so glad that you came on, especially this month, because it's Mental Health Awareness Month, and our mission with Crazy Talk Podcast is getting accurate information out to the public, and the role of the PCP, primary care physician, and therapy and mental health is so important. But I think too often, that can be disconnected. And so that's kind of one of the main things I wanted you to come on and hear about, how you see the family doctor working together with mental health, with other therapists or psychiatrists, sort of the whole mental health field.
Yeah. So obviously we do a lot of different things in any given day, but I think without a doubt, there's more overlap in what I do in the psychiatry than there is with any other field. And so obviously the ability for primary care doctors and therapists and psychiatrists to be able to work together is one of the most important ones, I believe. Getting to know your patients and having them feel comfortable and, you know, feeling like they can come to you for anything, you know, it's so important, because these issues, you know, they go undiagnosed and there's a stigma about all this and people don't want to talk about it. And so having good communication with the patient and with all the other specialists is of utmost importance. And that's one thing I really enjoy about it, is that, you know, I feel like most of us get in this field to get to know people, and what better way to do it than through helping them through mental health issues.
Jason, I think some of our listeners sent us in some questions. And so first of all, bear with us. This is our first time doing this, but we're being brave and we're trying to get information out there. And we are doing this Zoom because obviously COVID-19 has changed our lives recently. But some really great listeners sent some questions in for us to ask Dr. Dixon. Jason, can you tell us a little bit about those questions and read those off?
Yes, here we go. First question, what could doctors be doing to decrease the nation's benzodiazepine use other than simply never prescribing them?
Yeah, that's a great question. And once again, another class of medicines that has a stigma about it. I find that it's most helpful to educate my patients about the risk and benefits of every medicine, especially this class. And I find that patients really understand when you explain to them why there's a risk associated with a medicine and all the benefits that may come with it, that people really do, they get on board better about a good plan that's safe in the long term. And so I typically only use these medicines as what I call a bridge therapy to hopefully get patients on another medicine that controls their anxiety, where we don't need the as needed medications as much. And so that's where I see those medicines playing the biggest role. And if you have a good plan that doesn't involve benzos long term and everybody's on the same page, it seems like the medicines can be used correctly and we don't have an overuse of them nearly as often. And so I think big picture is have everybody needs to be aware of what the medicine is used for, how it's used correctly, and be on the same page about, you know, this is not a medicine we're going to put ourselves in a situation that it can become problematic. And if the patient and the doctor are both on the same page in the front end, I think you can really avoid more difficult situations down the road.
So Dr. Dixon, I really love that answer, because I think what you're saying is benzodiazepines aren't 100% wrong. They can be used helpful in the proper setting. And you mentioned something about bridge therapy, and that's honestly a new term for me. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so the term bridge therapy, I use that in the sense of patients come in with anxiety and depression, and a lot of the medicines that we use may not work today. It may take them weeks to work, and patients don't want to feel lousy today or for weeks on end until another medicine has time to work. So a lot of times we use the benzodiazepine class as bridge therapy to maybe knock down the anxiety a little bit until those other medicines have time to work. So that's where I use that term. And when patients understand that this is more of a short-term bridge, so to speak, to get to the other medicines working, it seems like it's a lot more doable to potentially get off of that medicine down the road.
Right. That makes sense to me. And I think that's also probably when sometimes therapy can come into play with that too, to help provide some more support with communication, maybe from your end. I feel like that I do that a lot actually in therapy, kind of explaining that and support you or the doctors in that, if that makes sense.
That bridge also allows us time to get patients into a therapist and develop their support system where we can develop coping mechanisms and things of that sort. So, yeah, there's a lot that needs to be done early on, and that really buys us some time to get the ball rolling on a lot of things to try to help the patient out.
Awesome. So, Jason, because you're not in the healthcare field right now, so sometimes we try to use you as a guide to help us know if we're speaking in normal terms. Do you feel like we answered that question?
I think so. I thought it was answered very well. Yes.
Okay. Do you want to move on to the next one?
Yes. Doc, do you see a point in the future when doctors and therapists will be working more closely together, either in a clinic or et cetera?
Yes, I think obviously communication between all fields needs to improve and will have to improve in the future. But yeah, therapy and medical doctors, I think, are going to continue to work closer and closer, just because the more we communicate with each other, the better off the patient's going to be. And you've seen, I don't know, in some other places in the country, therapists and doctors are even in the same building in some places. And I think long-term, that's sort of a goal that I have, is some sort of situation where I can say, hey, you know, I really think you need to talk to a therapist. Why don't you just walk down the hall and talk to Angela? And, you know, she can help you today to try to get things going much quicker, rather than, oh, we're going to refer you to a therapist. We'll get you in to see them in the next week or two. You know, well, then a week or two turns into a month, and we've lost a lot of time in that situation. So we've proven with science that a team approach helps patient outcomes, and mental health's no different.
Oh, I totally love that answer. And I'll let you know later what I want in my office when you have a space for me, okay?
Sounds good.
Because I really do. I think it's awesome working. I guess when I first came into this field, I was really in a situation because I worked inpatient. So we had a treatment team model. So we knew about all those pieces that really do work together better, you know, medication, therapy, everything.
Yeah, the inpatient side's really taken on the team approach, because it's so much easier because everybody's sort of there in one building, social workers, therapists, the whole nine yards. And I could see that sort of idea evolving into the outpatient world too. It'd be really neat to see how well it works. So
Jason, what do you think about that? What do you think about our idea? I think that we're saying yes, that we want to see more of that. And does that make sense? Why?
I think that sounds great. It definitely makes sense from a patient perspective to me, and the whole team and mind-body relationship. And I like it, the closeness with, hey, this. And I like what I've heard referred to as a warm handoff before. I think that helps a lot of patients if you meet the person with the person. And then, of course, in the same building, that's a lot more likely to happen than just, hey, call this phone number or go to this office. And then I think a warm handoff helps a lot as well. But just the closer relationship between the whole team helps everyone.
Agreed. So, Jason, what have we got next up on the list of questions?
Question 3, what are some specific signs of mental distress that you as a physician are watching for during the pandemic? And what signs have you seen the most of?
Yeah, I think the most common thing I've seen is the probably allergy type symptoms that come in and people are relatively convinced that they've got COVID. And that's understandable with what you're seeing on the news that, you know, you can even have mild symptoms and have this. And that is true in some cases. And so I think that's the biggest thing I'm seeing is very minor illnesses that are coming to the doctor that want to be addressed. And they likely do need to be addressed. But the COVID situation, it's a little bit unique because there's so many unknowns right now. And what we see is the 30 and 40 year old healthy person that's in the ICU. That's what you're seeing on the news every day. And in reality, that's the exception to most of the cases. And so in all of that, it comes with a lot of anxiety and distress and worry about, oh my gosh, am I going to be that person? So I really try to counsel my patients, you know, when they come in with potential COVID symptoms that, hey, chances are this is not COVID. And chances are that if it is, you're going to do just fine with this. And so that's the big thing I've been trying to do in my practice to try to head off any sort of anxiety. And then you have people that have been, you know, quarantined for weeks on end. And then that brings on a whole different bunch of issues that can come along with not being able to be out in the public and that sort of thing, especially for my more outgoing patients. So I think once again, talking people through this situation, letting them know that this will hopefully be short-lived and that we're going to try to return to normal as quickly as we can. And that in general, most people are not going to have any bad outcome from COVID-19.
Yeah, I have a follow-up on that because you used another, you know, it's my job. I just listen to all the mental health terms, you know, but you use the term counsel. And I think that's something that's important for patients coming to their doctor is to know that the doctor can counsel them and that they can open up to them and talk to them about multiple things like anxiety or stress, an array of things, if that makes sense. I think a lot of people don't realize that the primary care doctor is usually, I think, on the front lines of noticing anything mental health related or anxiety related. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I try to end every visit with, is there anything else going on? And I want my patients to be comfortable enough at that point, if there is something there, to say, yes, you know, there is something else going on. And that's, when it comes to mental health, it seems like that's where I catch most of, the vast majority of mental health issues is that, yeah, doc, there is something going on that I need to talk to you about. And so, you know, even when it's not the main complaint, you just really want people to feel comfortable enough to, before they walk out that door, you know, have the opportunity and feel comfortable no matter, you know, what the situation is to say, yeah, I do need to talk to you about something else.
Yeah, I think that is super important in all healthcare situations. And I know that you are really well at doing that. And I guess I'm going to just go ahead and speak up because that's the point of this podcast. But I really wish all doctors would do that. All doctors and nurses and everyone in healthcare, probably nurses probably do it a lot. But I think, unfortunately, some doctors have a reputation that they're not that approachable. And I hope that others can learn from that, right?
Yeah, we're human too, unfortunately. Unfortunately, we get behind. We have stress in our own lives, and so, you know, we try to do our best. I hope patients are understanding and they know that, you know, we have bad days too, and you know, I try to always be mindful of everybody, and I think most doctors do, and to really take the patient's time into consideration and take all the time that's needed to address any issues that may come up, because things do come up. And I ask of my patients, hey, when I'm running 30 or 40 minutes behind, just know that it's because somebody had something come up that needed to be dealt with. And someday that's going to be you sitting in that chair that has that that one more thing that needs to be talked about before you're walking out, and just know that I'm going to take the time to do my best to get it figured out. So,
Jason, what do you think about that?
I think that sounds great. I was wondering in general, Doc, what would be your overall prescription for people in dealing with this, just with the news? And we're talking about quarantining, how much people should quarantine. And of course, it's different for everybody. And we're talking about especially people with vulnerable populations or pre-existing conditions. But just for the common person out there, what would be your most basic prescription for people dealing with this?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Number one is educate yourself. Don't just trust what you're fed every day. The reality of the situation is probably somewhere between these extreme opinions that we're getting on both sides. And then another really interesting point of view I've had given to me was that this is really a lot of small pandemics, not one big pandemic. We're in Arkansas. It's very different than New York, and it's very different than other places in the country. So I would be very aware of what's going on where you are and let that guide your decision-making process. Use common sense I just want my patients to be comfortable with what they're doing. If restaurants open tomorrow and you're not comfortable, that's okay. You don't have to go. Continue doing whatever you're doing. And I think that's really going to allow our communities to go, back to what we call normal is one, addressing the situation in your area and having people that are comfortable doing what they feel like they can.
Okay. Thanks for sharing that. I think you're right. It's very situational, and I like that you pointed out, because I haven't actually thought of it that way, that these are several different smaller pandemics going on. Especially in Arkansas, we know that we like to be different than everybody else, and even in our own towns of central Arkansas. So I think that can definitely help us sort of process something very overwhelming and making it more personal. What do you think, Jason?
Yeah, I think that helped a lot, because there's the balance, and I like to, of course, use the acronym overall of the BS, and just to be smart. So then to weigh out all these opinions and then weigh out look at the science, and then, of course, there's the balance, back to the balance, the balance and everything. So a balance with this and a balance with the knowledge and the education and what we're hearing right from all the talking heads out there, and then from what we can use in our lives to help ourselves. So not to completely freak out or quarantine and just Purell our bodies and everything and shave all the hair off, to not going out there and trying to engage in the mass protests or just getting right beside in everyone's face to get it as much as possible, and accord the herd immunity and all the different things. So just looking at what works best for you and your life, and then being smart and educate and be cautious, but just to be smart. Yeah.
Jason loves the B word. I think it's his favorite. Balance. But I want to actually add on to that too, is that this is the time, like Dr. Dixon said, to do what you're comfortable with. But if you do need extra support, there's a lot of opportunities now, like telemedicine, teletherapy, phone stuff. So I think if you're not comfortable, it's totally okay to reach out in those ways and get the help you need. Because for once in our life, insurance companies are actually paying for things like that. So I think, I guess, you know what, we should really give them some credit right now, because we always give them a lot of hate. I know I do. But they're actually doing the right thing right now and covering some of this. So thank you, insurance companies.
Yeah, I agree. They've really allowed us to branch out and really take care of patients however we need to, phone, video. So at our clinic, we're seeing people outside. So if we have a patient that just says, hey, I'm not comfortable coming in clinic right now, we'll say, okay, that's fine. I will come outside in the parking lot and we'll see you out there. And so that's sort of the stance that our clinic's taken, is that one, people, they still need care. People still get pneumonia. People still get urinary tract infections. Mental health issues are obviously going to be a big thing that's going on right now. And so if patients don't feel comfortable coming to the doctor or to the therapist or wherever they need to go, they're not going to, and there's going to be more detrimental outcomes by people not seeking care if they don't get out and get the help that they need.
I can say I've been actually super impressed with your clinic in that way. And as everyone can imagine, I'm super picky because I've worked in a lot of different healthcare facilities and clinics, and you guys have been really doing a good job at that with the telemedicine and doing your testing. And if I'm correct, you have your own lab. Is that right, to do testing?
Yeah, so our lab's contracted through AEL. We have a lab here at our clinic. And so we were lucky to have that resource that allowed us to start, you know, screening people for COVID in mid-March, which was, you know, weeks ahead of some other clinics. And I do think that's one thing that helped our community. The area hospitals, both Baptist and Conway Regional, have been super supportive. They got testing off the ground early, and that's really helped. I think, if nothing else, you know, when your town has a COVID testing center, it hits home more and makes the situation a lot more real for people to become educated and understand this is a real threat that we need to deal with. That's sort of the stance we've taken. And luckily, I think our community's done a really good job. And I think our numbers have reflected that. You know, we did have some cases early on, but they, for the most part, have dwindled quickly and have been steady. And, you know, we've had cases pop up, but it's not like we've seen any big second surge or anything like that in Conway or Faulkner County. So hopefully we continue to see that same trend.
Awesome. Jason, how are we on the questions? Because I know there were several different topics that came in.
Sure. We have one more and then we can recap. Are we ready?
We're ready.
Okay. How do you determine when to refer a patient to a therapist versus a psychiatrist versus a hospital?
Oh yeah, that's another good one. I'm always open to, you know, whatever the patient in these situations feels like they need, I'm open to that. You know, if they come to my clinic and say, hey, I really want to talk to a therapist, then I will get them to a therapist as quickly as possible. And so that the therapist question is pretty straightforward. You know, I think it's a big piece in this that sort of falls under what I call my patient support system. And if they don't have a good one through mental health issues, things are not going to go as well as they would otherwise. And so, you know, if there's no support system there, I really encourage it. And if patients ask for it, I absolutely get them there. As far as a psychiatrist, when a patient comes into clinic, there's sort of two things that I feel like I have to do is, one, what's the diagnosis? Make the diagnosis. And two is, how are we going to treat it? And so if I have a hiccup at either one of those things, then that's the point at which I say, hey, maybe it's time for us to, you know, get a specialist involved. And that's no different than any other medical condition. If I'm treating a patient with heart disease and it gets to the point at which the diagnosis or the treatment are not things I can, you know, easily figure out, then I'm going to get them to a specialist. And I don't view my mental health patients any different. Like, if I'm spinning my wheels, it's time for me as their physician to get the answer for the patient. When it comes to hospitalizing a mental health patient, that's a little bit more of a difficult question. You know, I always want my patients to be safe. You know, if they're safe at home, then that's reassuring to me. If I feel like the patient, you know, can make good decisions on their own, then that helps, you know, potentially keep people out of the hospital. And then I think the last piece of that is, am I confident that the patient will, you know, reach out if they need help once they walk out of my office? And so those are all sort of questions I ask myself when it comes to making that decision. So I'm not sure if there's any part of that I need to elaborate more on or not.
No, I think that's good. And I'll elaborate a little bit too from my side on the hospital, and it's directly in line with yours, is safety. I mean, it's super, really, that's what the mental health hospitals are for, safety for the individual or other people. And sometimes when our clients or patients are having thoughts of self-harm or harming others, then we know that we can't be with them 24/7, like you said. And if they're in a safe space at home, they've got a good plan, it's not some immediate danger of safety, then hospitalization's the last resort. But I really agree with you. It's all about safety. That makes sense. Jason, do we explain that well? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think very well. And I was going to add to that in the sense of just to say that I have been hospitalized before. And I think somehow there's this big stigma in society about people in white coats coming and grabbing you, and then you're just going to be in the hospital indefinitely. And what a lot of people don't realize is, of course, that it's just at the patient's discretion. And of course, a lot of these facilities are just trying, again, for health and safety, and to keep you safe, to keep the patient safe, and then just to get back out there and lead as normal as life as possible. So to get them on medication or get them with therapy, but it's not just to, there's no white people in white coats that are just trying to lock up people indefinitely out there. That's not a real thing.
So Jason, when you did go inpatient, did you feel like it was helpful for you?
I felt like it was great. Honestly, I could go there right now. Is they would bring me food and I could just hang out and watch TV and read books. Man, I read so many books I hadn't read in so long. And so for me, it was wonderful. It was like a little mini vacation. I loved it.
Good for you. I'm glad it was helpful. And I'm 100% sure every client of mine would probably disagree with your opinion about that. But I do agree that it can be helpful. And there's usually people in there like Dr. Dixon and like myself and psychiatrists that all they're doing there is trying to help you and get you back out to living your best life.
Yeah, I think it's important for patients to understand anytime any of us make a decision, the number one priority is their health and safety. And we are not acting out of, anything other than trying to get them better. And so do we want to have to put people in the hospital or recommend that? No, that's the last thing we want to have to do. But if that's the best option to get the patient better, then that's why we're doing what we're doing. And so, you know, it's nothing more than, you know, sometimes you have to do things you don't want to do to get to where you want to be down the road. And if that means going to the hospital for a few days, then in the big picture, you know, a few days there to get you better is well worth it.
Yeah, I think we answered all those questions, did we, Jason?
Yeah, and I was just going to say, I think we can come back to the bridge therapy can work really well. And because sometimes people get really out of control and then they just need a little bit of normality and kind of a schedule in their lives for a little while with some medications or a regimen to get them back in that safe space. And that bridge therapy, I think, can work really well for that. And of course, that's what the hospitalization, I think, is for.
Yeah, I think, can we just start using your term, Dr. Dixon, bridge therapy for everything now?
Sure, because we can patent that.
Yeah, we really like it because Jason's right. We were talking about this before, and I know you and I have talked about this a lot. When you start a medication, even not a benzo, but a SSRI or anything like that, the idea is that it's sort of temporary till you get through what you're going through, till you learn your own coping skills with your therapist, till things shift in your life or whatever, that it's meant to be a support for a period of time. At least that's how I see it. Do you see it that way, Dr. Dixon?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the medications can, you know, become addicting, and that's why we're sort of in this battle of, you know, probably got overused for a lot of years, and now we've opinions are we just never use them again. And I don't think either way is the right way. It just has to be, you know, in moderation with doctor and patient on the same page. And, you know, I think we avoid problematic situations if we do it that way.
Yes, and I'm going to jump on here and be super lectury for a minute. It is very important to communicate all of this to your doctor and therapist or both, because you don't want to just change it up on your own, because there could be lots of, I'm guessing, physical health reasons why, Dr. Dixon?
Yeah, so anytime there's medications, especially controlled medications, there are obviously risks to those. And so if we do something and it's not helping, I want you to reach out to me. I want you to reach out to Angela, whoever it may be that you can get a hold to, and say, hey, what we're doing is not working. And so rather than change it yourself and then potentially have some bad outcome, I want you to pick up the phone and call me and tell me, hey, this isn't working, we're going to have to change it. Because very rarely are we out of options. That's almost never the case. And so luckily in these classes of medicine, there are tons of options. And so we may not get it right on the first time. That's okay. And I try to tell my patients that up front. Like, hey, this is something we're going to have to try. And if it doesn't work, we have more options. But don't just try this once, give up on it, and then, you know, kind of throw your hands up and walk away or start changing things on your own. Let us know. We can make a educated change and see if we can't get you better.
Yes, I think there's always hope and there's always options. I think that I'm really grateful that our healthcare system has that. Jason, was there anything else before we start wrapping up that wasn't answered or you want to go over again?
I think I'm good for everything, but I kind of had a personal question of if you, and Doc, if you have a patient that has done some research or done some Googling or talked to some friends, and then they're having an issue and they think that there's a certain drug, a prescription drug that could help them, and then they come to you and request that drug, is that considered drug-seeking behavior? Or would you potentially prescribe that medication? Or what are your thoughts on that?
No, I mean, if a patient comes to me with, you know, hey, I think I need an SSRI, and I've looked at them, and this one seems like the one that may help me the most, I'm definitely willing to, you know, consider that as an option if it's the appropriate medicine. When it comes to Googling stuff in regards to your health, this is a topic that I do talk to my patients a lot about. So Google is good and bad. Google is, if you're trying to diagnose something, I tell my patients, please don't do that. Come to me for that answer. Now, the best thing I know, the analogy that I have is for my diabetic patients. Don't Google your diabetic symptoms. Google a diabetic diet. Those are things that you can look up on Google that can be very helpful. Let me do the diagnosing. And then, you know, if I say, hey, you need to really focus on eating better, then those are things on Google that you can really look up. Or if Angela recommends, hey, this type of therapy at home, you know, educate yourself on that type of therapy, but don't try to diagnose yourself. Obviously, if you look things up on Google, you're going to get the worst possible answer. It's probably going to tell you that you're never going to make it to the doctor. You might as well just give up. And so that's not what I want my patients doing. You know, stay calm, bring your symptoms to me, and then we'll go from there.
Yes, same definitely with the mental health field, because you, even more so, you have way more training experience than therapists do, but there's so much that healthcare providers learn in clinic and seeing and actually talking to people and feeling emotions, and you, it's probably a bazillion tests that Google is not going to tell you. Even just with mental health, which is we have way fewer diagnoses than we use the DSM-5. I think you use the ICD something. What is it?
10 now.
Okay, 10. Yeah. So you cannot Google that.
Yeah. Great for information, terrible for diagnosing. You're going to just drive yourself further towards crazy. Googling, you're trying to diagnose yourself at home.
What do you think, Jason?
Yeah, I think so. I don't ever get on there for diagnosing, because you're going to go from a potential health regular diagnosis to driving yourself crazy, right, thinking you're going to die, and like Doc said, not even making it in to see your PCP or whomever to get treatment. So yeah, I definitely, yeah, stay away from self-diagnosing and from Google diagnosing.
Awesome. Dr. Dixon, did you have anything else before we start wrapping up?
No, I mean, I think it's just, you know, find yourself a doctor, find yourself a therapist that you trust and that you're comfortable with. And I think you'll find it, if you search, you'll find somebody that you feel like you can talk to that can take good care of you. And that it just takes, you know, you getting out there and finding that right person. So that, I think that's really important in mental health. And I encourage all of my patients to do that. And, you know, if you come to me or whoever it may be and you're not comfortable, don't hesitate to go find another opinion. I tell all my patients, you know, if you question something I'm telling you, please go find another opinion. That's okay. You know, you have to be comfortable with what people are telling you in regards to your mental health. And none of us take it personally if you seek more opinions or anything like that. So just find yourself somebody that you're comfortable with, and they'll take good care of you.
I totally agree with that too. There's a lot, we're lucky, we're in Conway, we're in this area. We have a lot of good therapists, counselors, a lot of good medical providers, and one person won't fit everyone. It takes time to find the right fit for you. And I'm super glad that you came on here with us today. It is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I know how important the PCP's role is in your overall health, plus your mental health. And I hope that we've been able to educate our listeners on that today. So if you have any questions, oh, and the person that their questions got chosen, they will get a t-shirt and a free and a mental health awareness pin. So we'll be sending that to you. And please reach out to us. Okay, you'll be hearing from us soon.